Welcome to Drive Time with Dr. Douglas, an hour-long conversation about your health with Atlanta internist Dr. Adrian Douglas. Dr. Douglas has been a fixture at Piedmont Atlanta Hospital for over 20 years. He is a fellow of the American College of Physicians. He also has an MD-VIP-affiliated practice in Buckhead. For the next hour, we will explore important health topics for men and women, and we will take your calls live at 404-880-9255. Here's your host, Dr. Adrian Douglas.
Good evening, Atlanta. This is Dr. Adrian C. Douglas, internist. Today is Drive Time with Dr. Douglas, focusing on lung cancer and lung-related disorders. Now, you might ask, why are we doing that? Well, you know, November is National Lung Cancer Awareness Month. So the goal is to encourage everyone to take a few minutes and review what is known so far about lung cancer and possibly learn more. First of all, lung cancer is the most common cause of cancer-related deaths worldwide. That's both in men and women. There are approximately 1.6 million deaths yearly attributed to lung cancer. More people with lung cancer die annually than colon, breast, and prostate cancer combined. Cigarette smoking is the most common cause of smoking-related deaths with cancer from the lungs. Non-smokers have a 30% greater chance of developing lung cancer, particularly if they're exposed from secondhand smoke at home and at work. Smoking also leads to an exacerbation of conditions such as asthma, chronic obstructive lung disease, which is a disease characterized by constriction of the bronchial tubes and difficulty with breathing and a sense of shortness of breath. Out of all this, people of African descent have the highest rate of the development of lung cancer and COPD. They both tend to be more severe, advanced, and lethal in people of African descent. Now, to that end, today we have with us Dr. Jermaine Jackson, a local board-certified pulmonologist and a staff member at Piedmont Atlanta Hospital. Dr. Jackson is a native of Chattanooga, Tennessee. He graduated from Tennessee State University and eventually completed his medical degree at the University of Tennessee College of Medicine at Memphis. Culminating his educational career at Duke University, where he received or completed his fellowship in pulmonary medicine before returning to Atlanta. He has been a staff member at Piedmont Atlanta Hospital over the last 5 to 7 years. So with no further ado, we'd like to welcome Dr. Jermaine Jackson to Drive Time with Dr. Douglas. Well, welcome, Dr. Jackson.
Thank you, Dr. Douglas. It's a pleasure and honor to be here, and certainly to talk about one of these disease states that impact so many people and have such a devastating outcome often. So I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Absolutely, absolutely. So lung cancer, you know, lung cancer tends to be a condition that, for the most part, as mentioned, affects everyone. It affects men and women equally, and it tends to be something that can really cause, you know, devastation by eventually leading to death at an extremely high rate. As mentioned, people of African descent tend to have a higher risk of having lung cancer and lung-related diseases, and also individuals that just have secondhand smoke exposure tend to have it. But, you know, for a lot of people, Dr. Jackson, they haven't been around secondhand smoke. And what are some of the other reasons that they could potentially, you know, be developing lung cancer?
A great question. The data is pretty clear. About 80 to 90% of all people who develop lung cancer have at some point had smoke exposure, mostly to tobacco-type products. Mm-hmm. But about 10% of patients will develop lung cancer irrespective of their exposure history. Now, we know that tobacco-related products and tobacco smoking is the most common risk factor associated with the development of lung cancer, but there are other risk factors, and those things can include environmental exposures, things such as asbestos, mm-hmm. uranium, those arsenic. Those are some of the elements that are in the environment. If you look throughout the world in some of the developing countries, oftentimes you'll find that things in the home, because they don't have exhaust systems and things of that nature to help help smoke and fumes and things like that to get out of the home, those things can actually increase their risk. So environmental factors, and then there's also increased genetic risk. Hmm. If you think about most of the things that happen to us, you can group them into three things. behavior, things that we do ourselves, mm-hmm. genetics, which you don't have much of control of, and then there's the environmental factors, which there's to some degree you have a little bit of control.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about genes, and we're not talking about Levi's, right, basically?
We're talking about the genes that you were given by your parents, but certainly not those that you'll put on from day to day.
Absolutely. Okay. So we're on Drive Time with Dr. Douglas at 404-880-9255. We'd love for you to call in and talk to us about your experiences or knowledge of lung cancer and lung-related disorders. Dr. Jackson, for some individuals, there's this condition or they are exposed to this substance in their home, basements. Can you elaborate on this radon that people get smoke detectors and they can get other detectors too. I mean, is that worth getting in your opinion?
Yeah, so radon is one of those elements that oftentimes we'll find it's ubiquitous. I mean, it's in the environment. Lots of times it can be in the ground and it's a breakdown product that we can see. The EPA and the Environmental Protection Agency has done a lot in terms of trying to curb the amount of radon and the byproducts that lead to radon development that's out there. It's not something that we advocate frequently in terms of trying to get radon detectors, but certainly if you have older homes being homes greater than 50 years of age, it's not one of those things I would say don't bypass it. If there's concern or consideration, or certainly if you've had someone in your family or household to develop a cancer, I would say maybe that's something to look into to just make sure you're not getting super levels or high levels of exposure to radon. But that's the classical thing that people talk about. Now, the other thing, of course, is asbestos, which we've heard about. Mm-hmm. Asbestos, as many people know, was one of those products that was used because it was a fire. It was protective against a lot of fire. So it was used in a lot of homes many years ago, so around pipes and in the inside the walls, et cetera. But we know that the little asbestos fibers can actually deposit down into the lungs. And the problem with that is that that tends to not lead to the development of lung cancer until you have a significant lag time, meaning many years from the time of exposure to the actual development. Typically, we say 20-plus years from the time you had true exposure to asbestos to the development of a certain type of lung cancer we often call mesothelioma. Mm-hmm. That tends to affect more the lining of the lung, which is called the pleura, than the actual lung tissue itself. But again, that's another one of those home elements that can increase your risk for developing cancer.
And occupations that are exposed, individuals that were involved in building, certainly I think maybe some military exposures also, air conditioning and plumbing, things along that line. And when people are around in people's homes, things along that line, that tends to increase one's exposure?
Absolutely. So as you mentioned, military personnel from several years ago, certainly people who were in the HVAC unit, the air and heating and plumbing, plumbers had high risk of exposure. And one of the interesting things that we started to find is that you would hear, and this goes back several years, but you would hear of the homemakers, the wives, when those roles and those house roles were often played out, they would develop lung cancer or develop mesothelioma. And one would ask, well, how did you develop it? And it wasn't because they were necessarily getting the exposure, but because of the duties they were doing in the home, like washing clothing, they would shake out the asbestos fibers, and then they were constantly being exposed. And that's one of the things that we picked up. I bring that up and mention that because maybe you didn't necessarily work with asbestos, but if you were around someone or dealt with the laundry of someone or had exposures to someone who constantly worked with asbestos, that's something to keep in mind that you may have increased risk also.
So this is Dr. Adrian C. Douglas on Drive Time with Dr. Douglas. We have Dr. Jermaine Jackson, board-certified pulmonologist, here with us today. We're talking about lung cancer and lung-related disorders. We'd love for you to give us a call at 404-880-9255, 404-880-9255. Dr. Jackson, we're living in Atlanta. You know, Atlanta, that's the city. I mean, what about all this pollution? I mean, you mentioned EPA. City of Atlanta or metropolitan area, at time to time, I seem like they've gotten in trouble with EPA. I think there may be more water than pollution, but I noticed that in certain counties in Georgia, you have to do certain things. If you're not in the metropolitan area, you don't have to worry about, you know, your cars and things like that. I mean, should we be concerned being here just in Atlanta or metropolitan areas as compared to being out in the rural areas? What would you tell me about that?
Where there's an association, but not necessarily a definitive causation, with being in suburban, urban areas, meaning that being in those areas, you do tend to have an increased risk, or there appears to be an increased risk, but we haven't been able to definitively say this is exactly what leads to that risk, because there's so many toxins and pollutants that we put into the air, especially in urban and suburban areas. Certainly the further you go out from urban areas, the amount of pollution tends to go down. That's a well-known fact that's out there. In fact, one of the things that we've started to see and we're starting to pay a little bit more attention to is how some of these pollutants are impacting our atmosphere. Mm-hmm. The ozone layer leading to increased air pollution, et cetera. That's becoming a hot topic, especially in my area when you talk about chest and thoracic diseases, because for so long we had put that on the back burner, but now air pollution and, more importantly, the impact of the ozone layer and air toxicity is starting to become a hot topic.
Absolutely. So as you know, we've had some concerns recently in metropolitan Atlanta about certain plants letting certain substances out into the atmosphere. That's still being determined exactly what the significance of that is. But understandably, exposure, be it, you know, through aerotoxins, things on that line, is something that we need to be concerned about. And it's important in terms of being in close proximity. So lung cancer can be divided into two different types. You can have small cell lung cancer and non-small cell lung cancer. Non-small cell being 85% of the cancers, small cell being 15%, small cell usually being aggressive. A lot of times it's found more in a more advanced stage, quote-unquote out of the barn, as compared to, if you will, non-small cell. Can you tell us in terms of things that we can do in terms of just kind of screening for cancers? There's some studies that have come out in the last 20 years, remarkable studies, and a number of our institutions, including Piedmont Atlanta Hospital, has been engaged in screening for lung cancer. So for the listening audience, screening is when you don't have any symptoms, but you have risk factors. You're not having some of the classic things that are associated with lung disease, such as cough. I think everybody would suggest cough. Potentially chest pain, wheezing, perhaps weight loss. There are a lot of different things that could be associated with. But if you don't have those symptoms, there's still a possibility of having lung cancer. So there are methods that we've been able to master over the last 10 to 15 years, which enable us to screen individuals which are at high risk for lung cancer. Can you expound on that, Dr. Jackson?
Absolutely. This is a hot thing that's out there. And the reason that this is important is, as you alluded to earlier, is that oftentimes lung cancer is found in the late stages. Gee. Anywhere between 70 to 80% of patients who actually develop lung cancer, they're found at a what we call an unresectable stage, meaning they can't undergo definitive care that would lead to a cure. So historically, one of the things we've always done is we try to figure out how can we screen patients who are considered high risk, mm-hmm. meaning that they've had certain exposures that increase their risk more than the general population. And the thing that we used to do was we used to do just baseline chest x-rays, and that mm-hmm. was done for a long time. But when we studied that, we found that baseline just doing chest x-rays either on an annual basis or semi-annual basis or whatever the frequency you wanted to choose didn't necessarily pick up the cancers that we wanted them to find. Ultimately, about 7 years ago, actually a little bit longer than that, the National Lung Cancer Screening Trial was done, NSLT is what we call it. And what this did is it looked at individuals who had high risk. High risk are those individuals who were ages 55 to 77 who have smoked approximately 30 pack years. Now, a pack year is the number of cigarette packs you smoke a day times the number of years you've done that. So, for example, if you smoke one pack a day and you've been doing that for the last 20 years, that's 20 pack years. So the individuals we found to be at high risk are those who had a so-called 30-pack year history of smoking, being in that age 55 to age 77, and then or those individuals who quit smoking within the last 15 years. So if you fell into one of those three criteria, you were able to get into this lung cancer screening trial. And what we found was remarkable outcomes. In other words, we were able to reduce the number of people who died by almost 20%, which is astounding. And that is much better than what we do with colon cancer screening, mammography for breast cancer screening, for prostate cancer screening. Mm-hmm. So this was just a landmark trial, and this is something that we're stressing to all of our individuals who fall within that category.
Absolutely. So listening audience, contact your healthcare provider. Almost all of the hospitals in Atlanta provide some type of service. We certainly provide it at Piedmont Atlanta Hospital, but it's significant in that its ability to pick up lung cancer at an early stage. And now we have a caller, Sybil from Atlanta. Thanks for calling Drive Time with Dr. Douglas.
Oh, hi, Dr. Douglas. I have a question for the pulmonary specialist regarding sarcoidosis. I know you're not talking about that, but it does affect the lungs. So is there a recent study about what causes sarcoid when it affects the lungs?
This is a great question.
Indeed.
Sarcoidosis, believe it or not, is one of the areas that I actually have a high propensity, and I really love and deal with a lot of patients who have sarcoidosis. Current state, unfortunately, we still don't necessarily know exactly what causes sarcoidosis. There's a lot you'll read on the internet. There's a lot you'll hear in the general population. If you go back to about 2004, we did something called the ACCESS trial, A-C-C-E-S-S. And basically what we did is we lined up several hundred people across the country, and we said, what do each of you have in common that could potentially lead to the development of sarcoidosis? And unfortunately, we were not able to find anything that was statistically significant. There are three schools of thought. Some people think it's genetics. We do know on chromosome 6, chromosomes being in the body, there's something that's associated with about 40% of patients who have sarcoidosis. But it's difficult to say that when the majority of people, 60%, don't have it. Some people think it's environmental, something that you've been exposed to at some point throughout your life. If you go back to 9/11, 2001, there were 75 firefighters who had pre-9/11 x-rays that were normal, but all of a sudden after fighting the fire of 9/11, they suddenly developed sarcoidosis. If you look at the Isle of Man, which is in the United Kingdom, there were 18 reported cases of individuals who either live with someone or work with someone who has sarcoidosis, which started to spur on this debate. Is it communicable, meaning can you pass it? But today, as of today, there's still no known definitive cause of sarcoidosis. Excellent question.
Deborah from Roswell, thanks for calling Drive Time with Dr. Douglas.
Thank you. I appreciate the chance to ask you a question. My dad was in the Navy for a 20-year submarine service, and he was diagnosed with some type of condition called asbestosis. It's not mesothelioma. He tried to explain to me this as if it's some kind of precondition. I was wondering what kind of screening he should be having on a regular basis. And what are the chances of asbestosis turning into something like mesothelioma?
Great question.
Well, asbestosis, as mentioned, your father was a part of the high-risk group that we talked about.
Submarine service electrician.
There you go. So we just talked about that, and certainly he had exposure to it. And as he suggested to you, it is a precancerous risk that is extremely high, and he needs to be closely monitored with regular images, CT scans, and pulmonary function tests performed by individuals like Dr. Jermaine Jackson. Dr. Jackson, you want to add on some additional information on that?
You're absolutely right, Dr. Douglas. Asbestos itself is just one of those identifiable risk factors. It doesn't necessarily mean he'll get mesothelioma, but his risk compared to the general population, i.e. someone who's not been exposed, is actually higher than that general population. But asbestos exposure, those little tiny fibers that make up asbestos, these little fiberglass-type fibers, they can actually deposit down into the deep crevices of the lung. So on the one hand, they can lead to an inflammatory response that also causes something we call pulmonary fibrosis, which is actually scarring of the lungs, not necessarily cancer. And that's one of those things that you can also keep an eye on, especially if they start to develop symptoms or he starts to develop symptoms like cough or shortness of breath, et cetera.
Did your father smoke? Go ahead.
I'm sorry. He was a three-pack-a-day smoker back in the day in the 1950s,
there you go.
My early 60s, but he stopped.
Yeah.
I guess I was just wondering how frequently should he be going for a CT scan?
So, again, according to the lung cancer screening trial, the way that works out is that we typically screen you. If you fall into that category, sounds like if he was high risk. But for individuals who quit smoking greater than 15 years ago, their risk has come down. So I make that plug to say that there's never a good time to not smoke. Stop smoking at any point, because the moment you stop smoking, that's the moment the clock starts in terms of reducing your overall risk. Now, your risk never returns to zero, but certainly that risk comes down. So if it's been greater than 15 years, he doesn't necessarily meet criteria for true lung cancer screening. But given his smoking history as well as asbestos exposure, I would say that at least at some point he should have some type of evaluation where either a chest x-ray or potentially a CT scan is done.
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. We're live on Drive Time with Dr. Douglas at 404-880-9255. We'd love for you to give us a call. We're discussing lung cancer and lung-related disorders today.
Programming on Jazz 91.9 WCLK is made possible in part by MDVIP. Dr. Adrian Douglas, host of Drive Time with Dr. Douglas, is an affiliated physician with MDVIP. He has practiced internal medicine at Piedmont Hospital for more than 20 years. Patients in his primary care practice take part in an annual wellness program. He offers same and next day appointments that start on time and last as long as needed. Dr. Douglas is also available by phone after hours. More information is available at mdvip.com.